just once more, she thought. Even if the next one would crack the bones of her arm. Just once more, even if the air which she forced down in gasps past her tight, swollen throat would be stopped altogether. Then she felt nothing. No pain, no muscles, only the thought that she had to beat him, to see him exhausted, to see him collapse. And then she would be free to die in the next moment. She won. Perhaps it was his laughing that made him lose, for once. He walked to the net while she stood still and threw his racket across at her feet, as if knowing that this was what she wanted. He walked out of the court and fell down on the grass of the lawn, collapsing, his head on his arm. She approached him slowly. She stood over him, looking down at his body stretched at her feet, looking at his sweat-drenched shirt and the strands of his hair spilled across his arm. He raised his head. His glance moved slowly up the line of her legs, to her shorts, to her blouse, to her eyes. It was a mocking glance that seemed to see straight through her clothes and through her mind. And it seemed to say that he had won. She sat at her desk at Rockdale that night, alone in the old station building, looking at the sky in the window. It was the hour she liked best, when the top panes of the window grew lighter and the rails of the track outside became threads of blurred silver across the lower panes. She turned off her lamp and watched the vast, soundless motion of light over a motionless earth. Things stood still. Not a leaf trembled on the branches, while the sky slowly lost its color and became an expanse that looked like a spread of glowing water. Her telephone was silent at this hour, almost as if movement had stopped everywhere along the system. She heard steps approaching outside, suddenly close to the door. Francisco came in. He had never come here before, but she was not astonished to see him. "What are you doing up at this hour?" she asked. "I didn't feel like sleeping." "How did you get here?" "I didn't hear your car." "I walked." Moments passed before she realized that she had not asked him why he came, and that she did not want to ask it. He wandered through the room looking at the clusters of waybills that hung on the walls, at the calendar with the picture of the Taggart Comet caught in a proud surge of motion toward the onlooker. He seemed casually at home, as if he felt that the place belonged to them, as they always felt whenever they were together. But he did not seem to want to talk. He asked a few questions about her job, then he kept silent. As the light grew outside, movement grew down on the line, and the telephone started ringing in the silence. She turned to her work. He sat in a corner, one leg thrown over the arm of his chair, waiting. She worked swiftly, feeling inordinately clear-headed. She found pleasure in the rapid precision of her hands. She concentrated on the sharp, bright sound of the phone, on the figures of train numbers, car numbers, order numbers. She was conscious of nothing else. But when a thin sheet of paper fluttered down to the floor and she bent to pick it up, she was suddenly as intently conscious of that particular moment, of herself and her own movement. She noticed her gray linen skirt, the rolled sleeve of her gray blouse, and her naked arm reaching down for the paper. She felt her heart stop causelessly in the kind of gasp one feels in moments of anticipation. She picked up the paper and turned back to her desk. It was almost full daylight. A train went past the station without stopping. In the purity of the morning light, the long line of car roofs melted into a silver string, and the train seemed suspended above the ground, not quite touching it, going past through the air. The floor of the station trembled, and glass rattled in the windows. She watched the train's flight with a smile of excitement. She glanced at Francisco. He was looking at her with the same smile. When the day operator arrived, she turned the station over to him, and they walked out into the morning air. The sun had not yet risen, and the air seemed radiant in its stead. She felt no exhaustion. She felt as if she were just getting up. She started toward her car, but Francisco said, "Let's walk home. We'll come for the car later." "All right." She was not astonished, and she did not mind the prospect of walking 5 miles. It seemed natural. Natural to the moment's peculiar reality that was sharply clear, but cut off from everything, immediate but disconnected, like a bright island in a wall of fog. The heightened, unquestioning reality one feels when one is drunk. The road led through the woods. They left the highway for an old trail that went twisting among the trees across miles of untouched country. There were no traces of human existence around them. Old ruts, overgrown with grass, made human presence seem more distant, adding the distance of years to the distance of miles. A haze of twilight remained over the ground, but in the breaks between the tree trunks, there were leaves that hung in patches of shining green and seemed to light the forest. The leaves hung still. They walked, alone to move through a motionless world. She noticed suddenly that they had not said a word for a long time. They came to a clearing. It was a small hollow at the bottom of a shaft made of straight rock hillsides. A stream cut across the grass, and tree branches flowed low to the ground like a curtain of green fluid. The sound of the water stressed the silence. The distant cut of open sky made the place seem more hidden. Far above, on the crest of a hill, one tree caught the first rays of sunlight. They stopped and looked at each other. She knew only when he did it that she had known he would. He seized her. She felt her lips in his mouth, felt her arms grasping him in violent answer, and knew for the first time how much she had wanted him to do it. She felt a moment's rebellion and a hint of fear. He held her, pressing the length of his body against hers with a tense, purposeful insistence, his hands moving over her breasts as if he were learning a proprietor's intimacy with her body, a shocking intimacy that needed no consent from her, no permission. She tried to pull herself away, but she only leaned back against his arms long enough to see his face and his smile, the smile that told her she had given him permission long ago. She thought that she must escape. Instead, it was she who pulled his head down to find his mouth again. She knew that fear was useless, that he would do what he wished, that the decision was his, that he left nothing possible to her except the thing she wanted most, to submit. She had no conscious realization of his purpose. Her vague knowledge of it was wiped out. She had no power to believe it clearly in this moment, to believe it about herself. She knew only that she was afraid. Yet what she felt was as if she were crying to him, "Don't ask me for it. Oh, don't ask me. Do it." She braced her feet for an instant to resist, but his mouth was pressed to hers, and they went down to the ground together, never breaking their lips apart. She lay still, as the motionless, then the quivering object of an act which he did simply, unhesitatingly, as of right, the right of the unendurable pleasure it gave them. He named what it meant to both of them in the first words he spoke afterwards. He said, "We had to learn it from each other." She looked at his long figure stretched on the grass beside her. He wore black slacks and a black shirt. Her eyes stopped on the belt, pulled tight across his slender waistline, and she felt the stab of an emotion that was like a gasp of pride, pride in her ownership of his body. She lay on her back looking up at the sky, feeling no desire to move or think or know that there was any time beyond this moment. When she came home, when she lay in bed, naked because her body had become an unfamiliar possession, too precious for the touch of a nightgown, because it gave her pleasure to feel naked and to feel as if the white sheets of her bed were touched by Francisco's body. When she thought that she would not sleep, because she did not want to rest and lose the most wonderful exhaustion she had ever known. Her last thought was of the times when she had wanted to express, but found no way to do it, an instant's knowledge of a feeling greater than happiness, the feeling of one's blessing upon the whole of the earth, the feeling of being in love with the fact that one exists and in this kind of world. She thought that the act she had learned was the way one expressed it. If this was a thought of the gravest importance, she did not know it. Nothing could be grave in a universe from which the concept of pain had been wiped out. She was not there to weigh her conclusion. She was asleep, a faint smile on her face, in a silent, luminous room filled with the light of morning.